You're listening to SBS News.
A researcher, author and consultant with lived experience of autism, Dr. Wen Lawson has a unique vantage point when it comes to finding solutions to creating more inclusive workplaces. He says his work as a trained psychologist has been crucial in his understanding of how to effectively communicate the challenges of living with autism and its diverse presentations, but also some of the solutions. During the month of April, advocates are drawing attention to the removal of barriers preventing autistic people from full and equal participation in society. In this episode of Weekend One-on-One, I spoke with Wen Lawson about his decades of work in bridging what he calls the double empathy gap.
My name is Wen Lawson. I'm a British psychologist, Australian social worker. I live in Warrnambool in country Victoria, and I'm autistic. I'm married. My wife is autistic. We have three autistic adult kids, and I have grandchildren who are also autistic, and we are all ADHD too.
I guess that's the reason why I really wanted to speak to you, because you come at it from different perspectives. The history of the UN Awareness Day 17 years ago really being declared around this idea of quality of life and this issue of discrimination and stigma. If we look at 17 years on, what's your view on whether this Awareness Day is still needed?
Yes, in some ways I think it is. I also look forward to it being much bigger than awareness, as in actioning. We need to be actioning support for autistic kids in schools. We need to be actioning support for when those young people turn 18 and move into adult services, and there just often aren't any services available for our young people. I think aware we have been for many years now, as in autism exists. People have been a bit scared, I think, because they know that the numbers have gone up, as in there are more of us. At the same time, we have more awareness, more understanding. The criteria for a diagnosis to obtain diagnosis for autism is more inclusive, is wider, takes in a bigger majority of people. And we also have much more understanding of how females look on the autism spectrum, where, as for many, many years, of course, women and girls were overlooked and not seen at all. Things have changed, not changed enough, but we're definitely on that route.
I was just reading your bio page on your website and how you kind of went through the ringer in terms of the diagnosis and how that's evolved. But in terms of, I guess, you know, sometimes we talk about autism and we jump ahead of, well, what is it? How do we define it? I think that's one of the hardest things. But in reference to your own story, which you've been quite open in sharing, how have we seen that evolution in understanding of autism to make it real for our listeners?
Huge, actually, because autism was like 1 in 10,000 people a very long time ago. And the numbers went up and up and up, and then it was like 1 in 100. Currently, we're seeing 1 in 35 young people somewhere on the autism spectrum. It's a cognitive style of thinking. It's a way of perceiving the world, and it does make it quite different for autistic people, especially in social surroundings. Socially, we relate and respond differently to often expected, and that can mean that we get mislabeled with various mental health illnesses and diagnoses, and behaviorally too. Some, if you don't understand why somebody would be doing something, it's easy to mislabel them. But that understanding has changed. We now have come to understand autistic people are very what we call mono, one-tracked, single-focused, black and white, some people call us. But at the same time, that's a cognitive style. It's a way of processing life. And if everybody around you is processing the world in multiple ways, as in they're shifting their attention quickly, they're coping with change better, although no one really likes change, I think, but certainly coping a lot better if you're not autistic. Whereas for us, because we're single-minded and only tend to attend to one thing at a time at any one time, we can't keep up with that pace of life that other people manage so much so well. Having said that, it does mean we become experts quite often in a number of different things. So, but generally speaking, that double empathy problem exists because people don't understand us, we don't understand them. So when we bridge that gap with mutual understanding, it changes everything. Autism come a long, long way from those days of seeing it as a type of psychosis, a type of childhood schizophrenia. We now know that none of those things. It's a cognitive style that goes from childhood to adult and on into older years, and it's who we are. It's how we come. We're born this way, and working with us for the people that we are makes a huge difference to everyone's lives, actually.
And do you think there's still a stigma against autism? In your experience, I mean, you've been sharing as an advocate your story and experiences, but we talked about the steps forward. Is there still a stigma?
There's stigma in a lot of things being human. People don't cope well with difference. But I don't think it's as strong, not in Australia anyway, as it always used to be. Like, there have been many shows on television that have helped people see us as autistic people, see what we're able to do, understand our difference. Those things have helped. There are books, there are comics, cartoons, right from kids in play school type, Muppet Show, the autistic Muppet that they have there, right through to adults in a whole heap of ways, moving well away from that kind of one thinking of Rain the Man, who was the autistic person that people came to know. That's one autistic person. So we're all very, very different and vary in ability and disability.
This whole journey of autism, is that connected in a way to your decision to pursue psychology, or was that a separate thing? How did that play out?
Yeah, no, it was very connected because as an autistic person, I wasn't taken seriously. I was initially assessed as having an intellectual disability and nobody really expected very much from me. So I needed to prove or to substantiate or to gain credibility at being able to speak into the autistic world. So going back to school at the age of 38 to do years 11 and 12 here in Australia, and then on to uni, eventually getting a PhD, all of that contributed to the right, not just to speak as a person who's living as an autistic person, but also academically and with the research and so on. So that's my whole life's work. This is what I do to help people understand autistic young people and autistic adults and older people. So important.
Yeah, and about that, I mean, as you referred to co-occurring ADHD, you mentioned gut issues and a whole bunch of other things. You mentioned, I guess that's one of the characteristics in a way, that some people get a diagnosis really young, some people get it in adulthood. This idea of, I guess, intersectionality, what has your research and your kind of experience in this field revealed about some of the I guess, added dimensions when you have intersectionality or co-occurring things that affect your autism experience?
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. So one intersectionality, as in being female or another being disabled beyond autism, as in other disabilities, being black, being blind, being deaf, or the intersections that people think of, but there's so many, many more, socioeconomic status and a whole heap of things that absolutely play into anybody's life as a human being. But if you're autistic as well, then each one of those adds weight to your experience and becomes more disabling over time. And the trauma that autistic feel is massive. It's traumatic being a square hole and being pushed into a round peg. Well, I mean a round peg into a square hole. Yeah, said it the right way second time. It's traumatic not being understood, not being accommodated. It's traumatic having people think that that's excessive. Why would you need to wear your headphones? Why do you need to be on your iPad so much? Why do you need... You need these things because the world we live in is crowding out my own thinking, taking over rumination in my thoughts, crowding out who I am as a person. I need to silence it, to quiet it down.
You have this image, the double empathy issue, and how do we bridge the gap? Have you, over the years, gotten more agile in helping find solutions and ways to bridge that gap?
I believe so. I really do, because it's taken me ages to work out other people. So I think I'm fortunate that I feel I can live in both worlds, if you like, so I can understand a little bit anyway, non-autistic people, and that helps bridge the gap between people, autistic and non-autistic. I can translate, I guess is the best way to think about it, and that's really, really helpful, because a lot of us as autistic people find it very difficult to translate who we are to help people understand us. And non-autistic people, gee, I think it's really tough being a non-autistic person, having so much, so many demands on you and so much that your expectations, norms. So there's two realms, two worlds, and I feel like I can walk across the bridge between the two and perhaps join the ends and bring us more together into an understanding. And that's my life's work. That's what I work to do, because it's only as you understand other that you can then relate. And it's in relationship that we find healing, that we find trust, and we find wholeness.
Have you observed a kind of a shift, I guess, in if we look at, say, education, employment settings, that the literature does show when we talk about well-being and lifespan outcomes, there's definitely more barriers in terms of employment, educational attainment when we talk about people with autism. What have you found there in terms of have we really made large steps forward in these arenas of you know, getting rid of discrimination and really allowing people to attain in these arenas?
We have come such a long way, especially, I think, in Australia. I think we've made enormous strides in those domains. Certainly not enough, but understanding when employers understand that when you employ an autistic person, you're employing someone who's trustworthy, who's going to turn up on time, they're honest, they'll be committed to what they do as long as they work or the work they're doing is of interest. When you talk about a monotropic mind, a certain cognitive style of thinking, we tend to really do well when we're connected, when we understand what's happening and our interest is triggered. Outside of interest, our minds don't work so well. Now, you can say that might be true for anybody, but actually for non-autistic people, they are able to work in areas and demonstrate ways to relate beyond interest, and that's really hard for us to do. Our minds are not made that way. That is what causes the double empathy problem, actually, this difference between us. So we've come a long way. Education's come a long way. I just really hope we don't go backwards. When I see some of the things that are going on in the world and I see society stepping back, you know, it's that pendulum thing. You swing both ways. You should sort of come to a middle of swinging equally. Quite often it goes to extremes. When we are accommodated, we work so well. We do so well in all fields, education, employment, and relationships. But it's those accommodations and understanding why we are disabled in this world that we live in. And when that disability is accommodated, the difference that it can make is massive.
What is that difference? Can you explain maybe what you've seen?
Yeah. It's the difference between being able to stay in a room or having to leave because of the noise. It's the difference between having to accommodate one thing at a time when everybody else is doing several. When you understand what autism is for that individual, remembering it's different for everyone, ordinary accommodations, just like wearing headphones, like being allowed to type instead of having to speak, being allowed extra time. They're small things, but they enable a person to have a life, and it mightn't seem traditional, it mightn't be the way that other people work, and that's fine, but it needs to work that way for us. We wouldn't hesitate if somebody decided or was told they needed to have glasses or spectacles to see. We would give them glasses. We don't hesitate about somebody needing hearing aids. It's what they need, we provide those. But when somebody needs to work on a computer instead of writing in a book, or when somebody finds keyboards easier than a pen, people sort of think, you need to use a pen. My only response to that is, why? People don't use pens very much these days in lots of ways. So it's changing our thinking to accommodate what used to be seen as unusual, or no, they shouldn't be allowed to do that because nobody else does it. well, we actually need to do it that way to survive. When you do that, those accommodations, small things, where you sit somebody in a classroom, kind of where you lay out an office in an employment place, being able to have a break, tea break, coffee, lunch, or whatever, on your own rather than with other people, being able to wait for phones, being whatever that need is, they're small things really, but they enable us to stay and function amongst other people. Currently I'm wearing hearing aids. I've just got them. I've had them a week now. They're not aids that necessarily aid my hearing as in amplifying noise. They de-amplify, they take out background noise. These hearing aids have enabled me to stay in a noisy place because they take down background noise, and that's precious.
And in terms of these insights, are you finding, you wear so many different hats, that, you know, if people are coming to you for your advising and your consulting insights, who is coming seeking that advice? Do we see more businesses, more employers, more of those decision makers coming to you trying to implement some of this insight that you're sharing with us?
I think in a roundabout way, yes, because I'm very involved with places like Deakin University, researching rural safe areas for autistic people. I'm very involved with a number of educational agencies. So indirectly, I would hope that information filters through. I don't have employers coming to me directly, but indirectly, as I run workshops and write books, research papers, all of those things that get put out in the general domain, I hope that they would take up that information. So that put out, we made a video, no, what's it called? A MOOC, it's called, a massive open online course for autism and mental health. And that's free. You can go on and do that course at your own time, in your own leisure, and understand about autism, understand how to keep yourself mentally well and so on, because the suicide rates in autism are bigger than any other. It's really high amount of young people that do commit suicide, not just attempt, but succeed, and you don't come back from that. So we need to be doing better as a people, as a society, so that our young people can thrive.
What do you see as the root of the stigma and the discrimination, the problem there? I know you talked about the gap and the double empathy problem, but what do you see at the root of it all?
It's an ongoing historical root that's been around for hundreds of years, I think, an understanding of humans as they should be like this, and if you come across a human that is not like this, they're different from you, it causes discomfort, even fear, and it's fear that causes stigma. So people fear what they don't understand, they fear what they don't know, and it's very easy for that to exist in the world that we're all part of. There was a time when people who had a disability were not seen openly. You didn't see people in wheelchairs, you didn't see people that were different from you, but we are much more at home and much more used to seeing people who are different from us, but that difference, I think, is where stigma comes from, and that's historically rooted in a long, long time ago of traditional things, that of roles of men, of women, of expectations on human behaviour and so on. So stigma is still here, alive and well, but I believe there is less of it as we learn to understand and accept difference.
I guess in the time span of maybe this time next year, when we're marking the Global Day of Awareness and Understanding of Autism, what's your hope of where we could be?
I certainly hope that we move on from awareness to action. And although action is happening, it's not enough. I want to see that more. I want to see schools accommodating and taking on people. Just normal. This is normal for us to be accommodated, and it shouldn't be seen as extra accommodations and going the extra mile. It should be normal, and I long to see that happening. So our very term, autism awareness, I would hope by next year will have changed to action for autism, for example, which probably is already out there, but we need to be doing more to move past awareness into doing in every sphere.